Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for November 29th, 2011. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Gerda Breitwieser about how signaling by calcium-sensing receptors is modulated by changes in calcium concentration. Parathyroid hormone and calcitonin are the two hormones that control the amount of calcium that's present in the blood. In response to low calcium, the parathyroid gland releases parathyroid hormone, which increases serum calcium by stimulating calcium release from intracellular stores and by increasing the absorption of calcium by the kidneys and the intestine. When serum calcium concentrations get too high, calcitonin is released by the thyroid gland to inhibit absorption of calcium. Cells of the parathyroid gland use cell surface calcium sensing receptors, or CASRs, to measure the amount of calcium that's present in the blood. A group led by Breitwieser has investigated how cells use CASRs to translate changes in calcium concentration into hormone secretion. Breitwieser spoke to me by telephone from the Weiss Center for Research in Danville, Pennsylvania. Welcome, Dr. Breitwieser.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Many receptors sense the presence or the absence of their ligands, but calcium sensing receptors, or CASRs, are constantly exposed to their calcium ligand. And so instead of just detecting the presence or the absence of ligand, they sense changes in the ligand concentration. How do changes in calcium concentration affect signaling through CASR?
Well, calcium sensing receptor signaling is in many ways typical of other GQ-coupled GPCRs, G-protein-coupled receptors, in that you get activation of the receptor and then increases in intracellular calcium. There are two unique features, however. One is that the receptor is sensitive to very small changes in extracellular calcium, on the order of less than half a millimolar. That can affect activity both when the calcium goes up and when the calcium goes down. But typically what one gets when calcium goes up by a small amount is an increase in intracellular calcium oscillations. This is actually reflected at the physiological level. It's been known for a very long time, since before the cloning of the receptor, that parathyroid hormone secretion, for instance, varies with very small fluctuations in serum calcium. There's another unique feature, and that is that signaling desensitizes very little over time. Most G-protein-coupled receptors that only see their agonist episodically desensitize in response to that agonist, but since calcium is always present in the extracellular medium or in the serum, that means basically that the receptor can't desensitize very much, or it wouldn't be there to respond to the fluctuations. We were puzzled by this as far back as the 1990s when we started studying this receptor, and we tried to use a related metabotropic glutamate receptor as our sort of control receptor because there was a lot more known about that one at the time. That turned out actually to be quite counterproductive because that receptor desensitizes so rapidly in ambient culture media that you have to really coax it to the surface in order to look at signaling. Whereas the calcium receptor is always there, seems always available for signaling, and we never really understood that, but it is a signature feature of the calcium sensing receptor, and it turns out that our current studies finally explain this phenomenon.
You mentioned that the calcium sensing receptor is always at the cell surface, and so in this current study, you were looking at trafficking of the receptor through the cell. Why look at intracellular trafficking of the receptor?
Well, yeah, trafficking is not the most obvious sort of first thing to try when you're trying to dissect signaling, but in fact, it was the last thing we looked at because it was the most difficult thing to look at for this particular receptor. We had a number of confounding results over the years that made us suspect that trafficking was involved. First, the receptors, most of them, in both endogenously expressed systems and in the heterologous systems that we use, most of the receptor is intracellular, and it's very hard to get more of them out there. We've tried all kinds of tricks over the years to try to externalize receptors to get higher signals, but we've been unsuccessful at that. But Conversely, when we've tried things to deplete cellular receptors, prolonged exposure, like you can, you know, incubate overnight in elevated calcium, and you still see the same number of receptors in the cell. So clearly there's regulation to maintain constant levels of the receptor, and if that's true, there's either elevated degradation or elevated cellular trafficking. And finally, we had kind of a number of hints from various kinds of experiments that said that maybe calcium would increase the number of receptors on the surface, but those methods that we used in the past weren't really refined enough to be able to look at these things in enough detail that we would convince ourselves that that was what was happening, since it really didn't, it kind of went against the current dogma for how G-protein coupled receptors ought to work.
And so what aspects of trafficking did you look at in this study, and how did you look at them?
Well, we wanted to be able to convince ourselves that trafficking was really regulated by receptor activation in an acute way. And so we monitored simultaneously both endocytosis, which is the typical response to agonist exposure for most GPCRs. They tend to internalize when they're exposed to agonist. And then we wanted to simultaneously measure exocytosis, or externalization of nascent receptors that hadn't been to the surface before, which we suspected was maybe triggered by the elevated extracellular calcium. So we were absolutely excited to see in the very first experiments that agonist-driven trafficking was really focused on the front end, or exocytosis, and that the endocytosis surprisingly operated at a steady rate regardless of what the extracellular calcium was in sort of the normal physiological range. So that turned out to really turn the normal accepted model for GPCR trafficking on its head. And we were really lucky that both the endo and exocytosis rates varied in a very controllable way, because if they both changed, we would have not really been able to analyze this data very easily. But it turned out that since the exocytosis was the only thing responsive to changes in calcium, it really simplified things for us. And immediately thereafter, we switched to another experimental method where we could monitor both the exocytosis plus signaling and measure those simultaneously in live cells, so that we could really solidify the link between the signaling and the trafficking, which we think is really driving the trafficking.
That's in contrast to most GPCRs, in which it's the endocytosis of the receptor that's more regulated than the exocytosis, than putting the receptor on the cell surface.
Exactly. Most GPCRs, and in fact, we tried to force the calcium sensing receptor into that mold for the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. We've looked at arrest and effects, and we've looked at endocytosis in various heterologous systems, but it's always been a very weak phenomenon for the calcium receptor. And so, you know, we never really looked at the other end. We never looked at exocytosis, because for the vast number of receptors that have been looked at, it's really sort of considered that the receptors just sort of go out, they get synthesized, and they're out there very quickly over the course of 40 minutes to an hour, and then they're at the surface until they are exposed to agonist, in which case they either desensitize and get degraded, or they desensitize and kind of recycle through the endocytic pathway. So we kind of tried that first for a long time and just couldn't convince ourselves that that was really explaining what we were seeing. And so this method of TERF imaging, where we can look at only the receptors on the surface, turned out to be absolutely critical for looking at externalization in real time in live cells.
Did you look at how the increase in calcium upregulates trafficking of the CASR to the cell surface?
Well, we've looked at the mechanism in the sense that we've tried to test whether G-protein coupled receptor activation of G-proteins is important, and we've used a generic blocker called galene that sort of blocks all G-protein interaction with effectors, the beta-gamma subunits at least, which then we think probably blocks the recycling of the G-proteins and shuts that down. That certainly blocks this process. We've done some very simple experiments to show that if you chelate the calcium intracellularly, that that shuts down the process. But what we've really been excited about in terms of mechanism is, where are these receptors coming from? Where are the pools? Because we can see this ongoing externalization that lasts for up to an hour and probably longer, and it's coming from intracellular pools that reach all the way back into the endoplasmic reticulum, and surprisingly, it seems to be coupled to upregulated biosynthesis. So we actually are, in the end, after all these years, learning that we are depleting intracellular receptors by stimulating them and causing ongoing signaling, but the cell has a way of making more to absolutely balance that level of depletion. So in the end, if you just run a Western blot, you don't see any difference in the number of receptors in the cell.
Well, calcium is such an important second messenger in all cell types that it makes sense that cells would have evolved a very robust mechanism for making sure that they always have enough of the calcium-sensing receptors around.
Exactly. And I think it's intriguing that we're finding more and more cell types that express this receptor that aren't intimately involved in organismal calcium homeostasis, sort of the parathyroid, kidney, intestine, and bone axis, where we think that that's absolutely critical for parathyroid hormone secretion and for regulating systemic serum calcium. But many other cell types also express these receptors. So the roles for the receptors in these other places are only slowly emerging. But we think that the ability to sense what's going on in the serum, in the vicinity of perhaps diffusion-restricted spaces in epithelia or in muscle, also plays a role in regulating cell function. And so the calcium receptor is probably important in all of those places, and its constant recycling is the way it manages to signal in the face of these constantly present agonists. So it's been a big surprise, but the first experiment when we could positively confirm that this was the mechanism, everything else sort of fell into place, and all the things that we sort of didn't quite understand over the last 10 or 15 years of studying this receptor seems now to all make sense, which is just a wonderful feeling.
So this is an unusual method of regulating the activity of a GPCR. Is this sort of mechanism, do you think, likely to function in the regulation of other GPCRs or other types of receptors?
I would say yes. I don't think this is unique to the calcium sensing receptor. I think we just found it here first because this receptor and its agonist, you know, sort of cry out for a mechanism that's different from a GPCR that only sees its agonist sporadically. As we've thought about what this mechanism really means in terms of the continuum of GPCRs and other membrane proteins, it's clear that this kind of a trafficking-based mechanism is probably true for many GPCRs and other proteins. There's already a strong literature in aquaporin water channel insertion in a receptor-regulated manner. Glucose transporters go in and out of membranes depending on insulin activation. We suspect that there are GPCRs that work this way. There are others. Adenosine receptors, for instance, sit in their agonist, ATP receptors, cannabinoid receptors, perhaps some steroid receptors that are at least at some parts of their life cycle exposed to agonist as well, and they need to counter that and continue to function. We think that there's probably a far extreme on both ends, the calcium receptor being, you know, regulated at the exocytic step, and most GPCRs that have been well studied in terms of trafficking are regulated at the endocytic step, but there's nothing to say that there aren't many receptors that sort of fall in that vast middle of that continuum where there's partial regulation at a number of different steps. In fact, since calcium is probably involved in vesicle fusion and vesicle formation, it's likely that many of the GQ-coupled GPCRs may trigger a bit of additional secretory traffic movement. And if there are GPCRs there that can go along for the ride, that may very well be possible. So we're really, I think, at the very beginning of trying to figure out how broadly applicable this kind of mechanism is. And I think that's going to be exciting. I think the methods that we've worked out should be applicable pretty rapidly to other kinds of membrane proteins that might use this mechanism.
Well, thank you, Dr. Breitweiser.
Thank you very much.
That was Gerda Breitweiser, senior author of a research article published in the November 22nd issue of Science Signaling. That paper by Grant and colleagues is titled Agonist-Driven Maturation and Plasma Membrane Insertion of Calcium Sensing Receptors Dynamically Controls Signal Amplitude. And that wraps up the Science Signaling Podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa VanHook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.